right, welcome to the Ellison Report, our weekly broadcast podcast hybrid journal, politics, policy, and the people, where we discuss the issues rather than react to the news here at home of cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And don't forget, our spring membership drive is in full gear. Actually, I think this will be the last day if you're listening, if you're not listening to the podcast and you're listening to us on our broadcast on WEAA 88.9 FM, the spring membership drive happening April 11th through the 17th. Go to weaa.org for more information. We're going to talk about that spring membership drive a little bit later in the show. I'm your host and executive producer, Charles Ellison, here at the WEAA studios on the campus, the storied campus of Morgan State University in Baltimore, Maryland. Senior producer Andre Melton is on the board of steel, as is, I'm told now, a little bit, Tyron Rice, who's our associate producer, and we're ready to offer deep dive public affairs programming from inside here in Charm City in the Baltimore, D.C. region. Find me at Ellison Report on Twitter. We're also now home to the slowly unveiled first public and experimental app-based 2016 National Black Voter Poll. And that's a joint effort done in conjunction with Zip, the question and answer app. And we're going to be talking to them later on in this program. So more on that in this program, more on that over the next week. So just check at Ellison Report. Just keep your eyes on at Ellison Report when you can, when you have time, for announcements on how you can participate. So this particular election cycle, there's been a lot of crazy happening. A lot of folks from, you know, sort of your casual remote punching observers of politics, and also all the way up to very seasoned observers and experts in political process and campaigns and elections, have been caught by surprise by a lot of the developments in this particular campaign cycle, from the rise of Donald Trump to the surging Bernie Sanders. But a lot of that is not so surprising. And in fact, a lot of it has to do with something that's called political psychology. And so 2016 really doesn't look all that crazy. And here to talk a little bit about that is David Rosen. He is the founder of First Person Politics. Check them out at firstpersonpolitics.com. It's a consultancy that specializes in the strategic applications of political psychology. You can also check them out at First Person Poll. David, how are you doing? Please tell us about political psychology, what that means.
Good, and thanks so much for having me on your show. So political psychology is basically the idea that people are not rational. You know, we all probably wish politics and people who participated in the political process were more rational, but in fact, they aren't. And we have a lot of studies showing that. And this looks at the ways in which people are predictably irrational and how that affects everything from leaders to followers to the entire political process.
So, but a lot of what we might view as irrational, from your analysis, it doesn't look so irrational. There's actually some rational trends that are taking place. So give us a few examples of those trends with respect. Let's start with the Republican primary first. Looks very crazy, looks very irrational, but there's some trends there. There's some cues, some things that actually aren't all that unusual, correct?
Exactly. Well, one of the things that I've been arguing for years, and this comes out of the political psychology research, is that one of the primary psychological foundations of political ideology is a phenomenon called right-wing authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. And a study came out a few months ago that was published in Politico and talked about a number of other places in the press, that found that high levels of authoritarianism are the single best predictor of being a Trump supporter, even better than conventional measures like race or education level or income or, mm-hmm. or other factors that are traditionally measured in public opinion research. And that was not surprising to me at all, as somebody who has studied authoritarian psychology for several years now. That was one example in the Republican primary. another example is of how political psychology is playing a role in this election is that Ted Cruz has been doing a very effective job of including various personality measures, classic personality measures from psychology, into his voter targeting programs. And so by taking advantage of this, he was able, this was one of the key ways that he was able to win Iowa.
That's what's so fascinating about this. Now, I'd like to have listeners go to Campaigns and Elections magazine. You recently wrote about that in Campaigns and Elections magazine. Go to campaignsandelections.com. It's actually one of my favorite reads. I've been following it for quite a long time. And you should check out David's piece with Political Psychology 2016 Doesn't Look So Crazy. And it gets a bit into this. You know, I'm real curious, David, that authoritarianism, that authoritarian streak that you're finding within the Republican electorate, what makes it different from authoritarianism or right-wing authoritarianism, or, you know, some folks might characterize it as fascism elsewhere? You know, some people might argue, well, you know, American-style authoritarianism seems a bit contained. So what makes it different? I'm curious.
Well, there are a lot of, I guess, synchronicities and connections between authoritarian psychology and fascism. In fact, a lot of scholars believe that authoritarian psychology was one of the key ingredients that repelled fascism. I guess the first key difference is that fascism is a, strictly speaking, an ideology, mm-hmm. whereas authoritarianism is actually a psychological domain.
Got it.
It runs deeper than just what your political beliefs and political values are. Authoritarianism, the definition that I've, I mean, there's a lot of definitions floating around of it, and I think many of them work in different contexts. The one that I tend to use is that it's support for traditional authorities, also a high level of conformity to strict social norms, mm-hmm. and the strong support for aggression and coercive measures to enforce both that obedience and conformity that I just talked about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, let's skip over to the Democratic side. And so what's the political psychology, or what sort of dimensions of political psychology are driving that side of the aisle right now? What are you identifying there? What are you seeing there?
Sure. Well, on the Republican side of the aisle, the tension seems to be primarily ideological in nature, whereas on the Democratic side, the divides seem to have more of a generational dimension to them. Mm. What we're seeing in the 2016 election is that voters under 35, but particularly voters under 30, are gravitating strongly toward the Bernie Sanders campaign, and those voters are really the core group of millennials. This is the generation that was born after about 1982 up to as late as 2004, mm-hmm. Depending upon which definition you use. But they are very, very liberal. Many of them would even consider themselves socialist. This is an ambitious, optimistic, progressive, and very civic-minded generation that is going to, over time, push the Democratic Party and eventually the entire country much further to the left than they have been in many, many decades.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's an expectation, particularly during these presidential cycles, of enormous change of, you know, some sort of, you know, like you have Bernie Sanders, for example. He's been fashioning himself as this political revolutionary. And so especially we've been seeing it over the past few election cycles, this very high expectation, particularly from those in the millennial segment of the population, this drive for change, for very dramatic change. And that never happens. And is that because, you know, you just have those fundamentals of political psychology are just cemented? There's so much in place that the campaigns, they know this, those running for re-election, they know this, and it's just you know, we're just sort of campaigning around those foundations, those dynamics, which just tend to just stay fairly constant. Is that what's going on here?
Well, I think that the desire for big radical change is partly in response to, you know, the situation that we're facing in this country with the economy. People are facing really hard times. The middle class is in a state of free fall, and people are not happy with the leadership that they've seen out of Washington. And that's part of what's fueling the desire for bigger changes in both parties. Is it that there's a growing dissatisfaction with the leadership. But, you know, there's also a generational component to that. And here's what I mean by that. Every 80 years or so, a generation comes along that that is much more civic-minded, much more ambitious, and generally has a much more kind of progressive liberal orientation, and they generally vote fairly monolithically. The last generation to behave this way was the greatest generation. These were the folks who suffered through the Depression as young adults and then fought in World War II. And they are the kind of historical antecedent to the millennial generation. So we can expect things from the millennials that are very similar to what we saw from the GIs. And then among those things are a call for big sweeping changes in the country.
Yeah, I'd like to bring you on more, David, in the future to talk a bit about, you know, how political psychology is unfolding through the course of this election. I'm real curious. One last question here, too, is that how does political psychology, how does the psychological data and analytics that a campaign like Ted Cruz is using, so how is that changing polling? Because there's been a lot of conversation about polling lately, because, you know, it seemed like we've been so reliant on polling for so many generations and years to determine the outcomes of elections. But it's getting a bit more sophisticated than that. And so, political psychology taking the place of polling?
Not completely just yet. I think that that many pollsters are still relatively new to the political psychology material and the ideas that are kind of at the foundation of this field. Most pollsters are still very much steeped in the political science tradition. And so, you know, for instance, when they go out to measure ideology, rather than using measures of psychological authoritarianism or another one, which is social dominance orientation, they're still using classic either single dimension measures, that place people on just a left to right scale, or they're using standard issue questions to measure ideology rather than these psychological measures. Issue questions, one of the dirty little secrets is that they actually measure partisanship more than they measure ideology.
Got it.
So I think that the we've still got a long way to go in terms of political consultants and strategists embracing this material as part of their work. I do think that there is a lot that political psychology can contribute to public opinion research, among them things like ideology, and also including measures of personality into our polling questions. So, for instance, one of the things that we know is that extroverts, for instance, are much more likely to engage in a campaign tactic if it involves a social component, whereas introverts, they're a little bit more reserved. You know, if you ask them to come out to a rally or engage in door-to-door canvassing, they're probably not going to be as likely to sign up.
Got it.
So there are all kinds of new innovations that that can be incorporated into a campaign and that can supplement the work being done by pollsters to really enhance their understanding of the electorate.
All right. Hey, David, I'm going to have to let you go. Fascinating discussion here. We're definitely going to have you back. Keep us posted on what's happening at First Person Politics and your new research from there. David Rosen is the founder of First Person Politics. More information at firstpersonpolitics.com, at First Person Poll on Twitter. Thanks so much, David.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care. When we come back, David Lublin, professor of political science at American University, offering analysis on that recent one person, one vote Supreme Court ruling back here at the Ellison Report at your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We choose our programming specifically to uplift, inspire, and make our community aware. If you are uplifted by what we do, join us. Be a part of the WEAA family. For more information, you can go to weaa.org. We're so excited and proud that thousands of listeners like you have decided to be the we in WEAA. That we, that W-E is very important. It's very significant. Now it's your turn to join our family today. Be counted as a member. Call 410-319-8888. Or if you want to keep it a little easy, join online at weaa.org. That's no problem. We got you covered both by phone and also online. Just call us at 410-319-8888. Promise you, folks are on the phones now, or you can just join online at weaa.org. The Ellison Report is made possible by generous support from Oneness Mobility. More at Oneness Mobility, and with support from BE Strategy. More at strategybe.com. Made possible by support from listeners like you. Go to weaa.org for more information on our spring membership drive, or you can call 410-319-8888. You can call as this show is happening and make your pledge today. Become a part of the WEAA family. Put the we in WEAA. So there was a very consequential Supreme Court case or ruling that took place in the past week, just last week, on the whole notion, the principle, the foundation of one person, one vote. In Evanwell versus Abbott, which came out of Texas, you had two plaintiffs, two residents residing in two Texas state Senate districts who were arguing against the whole concept of one person, one vote. And suddenly it got very complicated. Essentially there was a ruling that was favoring the defendants. The state of Texas and Governor Abbott essentially saying, no, we want to maintain one person, one vote. Everybody in a legislative district, whether it's state or congressional, should be represented. We should continue with that. But for some reason, it just got very complex. And so a lot of folks were actually a little bit surprised on some levels by the unanimous 8-0 ruling. Here to offer a little bit of context to kind of explain exactly what happened is David Lublin. He's a professor of government at American University, and he joins us by phone. David, how are you doing?
Good. Thanks for having me.
All right. Excellent. So tell us first, why is, you know, just for our listeners, kind of to edify them a bit, why is one person, one vote? Why is that so important? How long has that been around? Why do we have to maintain that?
Well, the principle was most firmly established by the Supreme Court in a couple of cases from the 1960s, Baker v. Carr and Reynolds v. Sims. And it prevents the overrepresentation of some areas versus another. I mean, back in the day then, you often had cities had far fewer representatives for their population than did rural areas. Mm-hmm. So that it was really unfair to those people living in cities.
Mm-hmm. Now, with this past ruling, the one that just happened last week, Evanwell versus V. Abbott, it's very significant. I mean, it was a unanimous decision. I guess the first question is, how did justices come to the realization that, because it seemed sort of different from how they were feeling during oral arguments in December, how do you think they came to this realization that we need to maintain one person, one vote?
I think there's sort of two aspects of what's going on here. The first aspect is this was a highly partisan lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you essentially had conservatives or Republicans were filing this suit, figuring that if we drew districts based on either the number of registered voters, the number of eligible voters, or the number of people who voted, that these districts would be more Republican overall because of areas with lower turnout, particularly, say, areas with high Latino or Asian populations, you'd need to include more of them in order to make up the number of voters if you were using that instead of population. And so this was a pretty nakedly partisan effort to mm-hmm. aid the Republican Party. The second aspect is that the different bases for drawing districts are used in different places, but often the places that use eligible voters are frankly much better than we are at
making sure everyone is registered. Mm-hmm. So there's less of an issue there. Here, I think the Supreme Court is uncomfortable in sort of deciding the question, unless they have to, as to sort of what basis you should use to draw the districts. The fact is that total population has been used for ages here, and in particular, the Constitution specifies that for allocating congressional districts among the states, that's what you have to use, and the Supreme Court has upheld that previously. So I think the Supreme Court was very uncomfortable with this lawsuit that clearly had a political end and that was trying to make them enter into a political debate that they didn't need to enter into.
Now, okay, so you're saying the Supreme Court was very uncomfortable about it, but there were some suggestions during oral arguments. You know, you had like Chief Justice John Roberts who was saying, well, you know, we're trying to protect eligible voters here. And that's what one person, one vote is all about, right? So, you know, you had the plaintiffs who were saying, you know what, we're eligible voters. And so our vote should count. Why are we counting folks who aren't eligible to vote or who aren't registered to vote? And so that sort of goes against the principle of one person, one vote, because you're trying to protect voters. You're not just trying to protect everybody, correct?
Well, this is part of the debate, is that, you know, the argument is made on the other side that, after all, you know, children, people who are not citizens, and the like deserve, if they don't deserve the vote, they deserve representation by people from their area. Mm-hmm. And that, after all, children become adults and, you know, have a lot of concerns that need weighting in public policy as well. And for that matter, many immigrants become citizens. So, and certainly they have children who are citizens. So, you know, the idea of who deserves representation, what basis, is far from clear. And I think the key thing here also is we have such a long history of basing it on total population that, the sole basis for the case here for changing it was basically a partisan one. And while it was being made in terms of a fairness aspect, certainly you could make that argument as they did. It's, you know, the reality behind it was pretty obvious to everybody. And, the key door, of course, that's left open is what if states choose to do it a different way? Will they be allowed to do that? And the Supreme Court was very careful not to rule on that question. They didn't say it was okay to do that, which was sort of a bit of a surprise almost, because they could have just said, well, total population is fine, but so are these other ways. And instead, they said, well, total population is fine. We don't have to reach the conclusion as to whether these other methods are fine, and so we're not going to, which is a fine example of judicial restraint that courts often try not to rule on things unless they have to, because why make new law if you don't have to?
David Lublin is a professor of government at American University. He's also the author of three books, including, check out Minority Rules, Electoral Systems, Decentralization, and Ethno-Regional Parties. Also, The Paradox of Representation, Racial Gerrymandering and Minority Interest in Congress. Also, check out The Republican South, Democratization and Partisan Change. Check out those books. I'm sure you can go to Amazon.com for that. American.edu for more information, and catch him on Twitter at The Seventh Estate. David, quick question here. This might be our last. So you're saying the court exercised a bit of restraint here. They want to maintain the principle of one person, one vote. But they also gave states, or not states, but yeah, they gave states, or they gave plaintiffs like Evan Well a little bit of latitude here. They didn't necessarily say, hey, you can't do this at all. They just basically said, hey, you know what? We wouldn't recommend you do this, but they still left the door open for future challenges to one person, one vote, correct?
They did leave the door open, for sure. And some states do alter it a bit now already. The state of Maryland allocates prisoners back to where they're from. Mm-hmm. So, for example, like a place with a prison in a rural area doesn't get inflated representation. And I think Kansas does the same with college students. But they did leave it open, and it is open to future challenges. On the other hand, I think by doing that, they were able to get that 8-0 ruling that was so emphatic in favor of total population being utterly legal. And, you know, that I think the other thing is, by not leaving it decided either way, if the Republicans decide to pursue this, they know they're in danger of having their redistricting plans overturned and drawn by someone else. But I bet you're right. Someone is going to try it. And it's a pity that, you know, even one person, one vote has now become a partisan issue.
All right. David, I'm going to have to let you go there. Thanks so much. David Lublin, he is professor of government at American University. Check him at the Seventh Estate. The Seventh State. What shorter. Now, thanks so much, David. Really appreciate it, man. We'll talk to you again.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. And we're going to be right back with our roundtable panelists, Peter Groff and Keaton Nichols, coming up next here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. WEAA 88.9 FM is the only radio station in Baltimore that satisfies the needs of the community. That's you. From our award-winning public affairs programming to an exquisite blend of music, including jazz, gospel, reggae, Latin, house, and hip-hop. I'm actually a very avid listener myself. I've half grown up with WEAA's program, especially the music programming. Where else can you find something for everyone? It deserves your financial support. And if you've been listening to WEAA for a long time like I have, now is the time for you to step forward and be counted as a member. Don't go to 88.9 FM one day and it not be there. And you're like, what happened to WEAA? Where is it? Where's my program? Where's my favorite show? Where's my favorite music? All right. Here's the time to prevent any of that from happening, from that ever becoming a reality. We know you've been meaning to call, so do it today. 410-319-8888 or join online at weaa.org. And we're back at the Ellison Report, made possible by support from Oneness Mobility. More at onenessmobility.com. And from partners like BE Strategy, Strategy Research Communications, more at strategybe.com. And also from listeners like you, folks who support WEAA, top community programming. Go to weaa.org for more information, but also to pledge your support, you can also call 410-319-8888. The phone lines are open now. There are folks there waiting for your call, waiting for you to make a pledge to the community. So now let's talk about the horse races. What's happening on the Democratic and Republican side? We've got our distinguished panelists always here joining us and offering us some great insights. We've got Peter Groff, former Obama appointee, also happens to be former president of the Colorado State Senate. He's joining us by phone at Peter C. Groff for more information and just to kind of, you know, talk to him, see what he's what's on his mind lately as far as politics is concerned. And also Keaton Nichols. He's a producer and host at WURD AM 900 AM in Philadelphia. I hear they're kind of busy there, too. They probably got
always.
Y'all probably have a spring membership drive as well.
Summer one, too. And I think we got one in the fall.
There you go. Yep. It's always the radio is so fun. 900 AM WURD.com. Is that correct? That's the website.
Yes, sir.
All right,
yes,
excellent.
Sir.
And where are you on Twitter, Keaton? Because I know
you can check me out at Keaton D. Nichols, just like my name on Twitter, Instagram. You can also find me there on Facebook, too.
Excellent, excellent. All right, so, gentlemen, we've got some limited time here, but I want to get into the primaries first. So let's look at the Republican side. Let's start off with them first. Had a series of contests that happened, like in Wyoming, Colorado. Just announced the very tight results of the Missouri primary. And, you had Ted Cruz seem to be winning a string of contests there for a minute. And then we come up to Missouri. Looks like Trump got that. So, I mean, does Trump have this locked up? Peter, I'm going to start with you. I mean, you pretty much kind of feel that, you know, everything else from this point forward is just pretty much pro forma?
It's really close at this point, Charles. I think the stop Trump folks are kind of running out of steam. You've got New York on Tuesday, Indiana coming up, I think, a week after that. Really could be where Cruz and those folks kind of make a last stand. And there's California. And if Trump doesn't kind of get to understand that there are actually rules that govern how delegates are allotted, maybe California gives him trouble. But I think that effort to stop Trump is beginning to run out of steam. They're just running out of states and delegates. The question is, how close to that magic number will he get?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where we are right now. There's a possibility he could have, a handful over or a handful short. If it's a handful short, again, I just don't see anyone standing up in the hall in Cleveland and saying, hey, this is not going to be our nominee, particularly with Speaker Ryan having taken himself out of the running for any nomination bid at this point.
Yeah, I was so hoping Speaker Paul Ryan would have engaged in like a House of Cards convention scenario there. I really was hoping for that.
Minus the murders, right?
Minus the murders. So you got to keep watching, Peter. See, I'm not going to spoil it for you. I know our listeners out there
you.
Who watch House of Cards, I'm not going to tell you how it ends up, but it was really kind of funny, kind of surreal that they did the season like that while we're in the throes of a really crazy election cycle. Keaton, one thing I love to have you both on because Peter from Colorado, Keaton from Pennsylvania, battleground state. So, Keaton, what are folks in Pennsylvania, especially southeastern PA, how do they feel about Trump right now? Did they get the sense that, Republicans are rallying around this guy?
Yeah, I mean, and it's tough, especially in this very Democratic area of the state, to get a real accurate description from the people that you talk to. But when you look at the polling numbers in Pennsylvania and in New York and in some upcoming primaries as well, even still, Trump had a really bad week this week, about the last week and a half or so.
Yeah.
He's really been taking it from the Republican Party, losing a couple of those primaries. Just gave Ted Cruz the opportunity to stand up and beat his chest a little bit. But, I agree. I don't see this as the Never Trump or the anti-Trump coalition building up enough steam at this point to really officially make this convention interesting in terms of trying to dethrone Trump. I think they got involved in that process entirely too late. And here in Pennsylvania, where Pennsylvania, as you mentioned, it's a battleground state when it comes to the presidential election. I mean, I feel like Republicans think as though Donald Trump is their strongest chance against a Democrat. And I think that is beginning to be the realization when you look at some of these poll numbers, certainly the exit polling from some of the early primaries, sort of gave that impression that even with likely GOP voters, they're not going to completely abandon the party necessarily. About half aren't really willing to abandon the party in the name of Trump being their nominee. So he still has strong enough, more than strong enough, I think, support to secure the nomination. And then the anti-Trump people just got to this one too late.
I think that, he's definitely your best chance of beating the Democratic nominee if you're going to rely increasingly on racial dog whistle politics and also voter ID laws coming up in November.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is, sort of the untold story there. So let's pivot over to the Democratic side. I mean, is Bernie surging here? He's won he had won a long string of contests, about seven primary contests. We came up, hit a roadblock just recently with the announcement in Missouri. You had Hillary Clinton also announced as the winner in Missouri by it was like 0.2 of a percentage point in terms of the mm-hmm. distance there. So, but, you know, does this mean that Bernie's really catching fire, catching momentum? I mean, or Hillary Clinton, she was on CNN the other day saying, you know what, I'm going to be the nominee. Like, I'm going to move on.
I think just like on the Republican side, Bernie and those feeling the burn are just kind of running out of time. He did have a string of wins there. But when you look at the delegates and how they're going to be allotted, she came out ahead. And she's still, even if you take out superdelegates, which, by the way, have been in place for 20 years, Senator Sanders, had you been a Democrat, you would have known that. But if you take out those superdelegates, she's still up by 240. And then probably going to have a big win in New York on Tuesday. So I think despite what Senator Sanders has been able to do, which really is kind of remarkable in terms of how he has put himself in play, I think he'll still manage to be relatively relevant moving forward. But this nomination is Secretary Clinton's to lose, you know, barring some FBI indictment from the Justice Department, but right. I still think it's hers to lose.
Yeah,
it's going to run out of time again and steam.
Yeah, you have President Obama, you know, sort of downplaying the whole notion of an indictment coming down there. You know, just basically saying, you know, hey, you know, she just kind of mismanaged the whole email thing, but there's nothing sort of illegal going on here. And yeah, Bernie, I could see that happening with Bernie. You know, like, oh, you know, hey, Senator, thanks for joining Democratic presidential politics. So we have to tell you about these superdelegates. Superdelegates?
Right.
Nobody told me about the superdelegates. What are the superdelegates? You know. So, hey, Keaton.
Yeah, Senator, they're huge.
They're huge. Yeah, it's a pretty big deal, Senator. Sorry. You know, I was just letting you know. Hey, Keaton, but any kind of momentum there as far as Bernie Sanders?
I think, you know, we talked about this a few weeks back about in terms of what are we going to get from this Bernie Sanders run for president if indeed we don't get the nomination from him for the Democrats, which was looking increasingly like the case as the weeks went on. And I still think Hillary Clinton is a shoo-in to win this, I think, because she has so many delegates at this point. There's still some rumblings in the Sanders camp about potentially stealing some of those pledged delegates, I'm sorry, the superdelegates away from Clinton and making this race a little bit more even. But still, even with that, about a 700-delegate lead, superdelegates included, not looking so good necessarily for Sanders. You hear a lot of terms like, well, it'll take a miracle, or it'll take, you know, something really incredible to happen at this point in order for Clinton to lose it. That's really what it would be, Hillary Clinton losing it and not Bernie Sanders winning it. But I think that, you know, the overall movement of what you feel definitely online with younger communities that are talking about this election, a lot more young people involved in this election that didn't really become controversial until now, because in 2008 and 2012, they were with the popular candidate. Millennials were with the popular candidate for the Democratic Party, so there was no controversy. I think the issue with this is that as we continue to push towards the convention this summer, you're going to find a bigger split in the support of these two, for these two, rather. And Hillary Clinton is still going to win, but at the convention, you're going to have a lot of folk who not just supported Bernie Sanders, but really do not like Hillary Clinton at all. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who are voting for Hillary Clinton that are holding their nose while doing so. Just knowing that might be the wisest political strategy at this point to rally behind who is the front runner in the campaign. But I think as you head towards that convention, the Bernie Sanders, what's going to be done with the Bernie Sanders supporters and what the Bernie Sanders supporters will do then becomes the most interesting thing to watch about the Democratic side of the election.
Right.
As the party becomes more divided, I think the people who are supporting the candidate who's not going to win, especially young people who have already sort of felt disenfranchised from this process, are certainly going to be faced with an important decision. Do you vote for Hillary Clinton in the general because it's the thing to do? It's what would be best for your party and also against who will likely be Trump? Or do you sit this one out and you say, look, I'm tired of the whole establishment. Bernie Sanders has opened my eyes to many of these things, many of the processes that are involved in this election. Mm-hmm. I don't want any part of it. I mean, I really see a strong contingency of folk in that camp. And I think that could be problematic for the Democrats, not necessarily for Hillary Clinton, who I think will be fine still win the presidency. But in terms of the Democratic Party and the process in general, this is a key time, I think, for young people, for millennials to be involved in this.
Got it. Going to have to wrap it up there. Keaton, we didn't get to another part of our conversation. I might have you gentlemen back on next week if I can. I'll check with your schedules. But we'll continue the conversation. Peter Groff, Keaton Nichols. Go to Peter C. Groff on Twitter. Also go to Keaton D. Nichols on Twitter as well. Thanks so much, gentlemen. We'll talk to you again.
Thanks, Charles.
Thank you.
All right. And coming back, we'll have Catalina Burden, also founder of Zip the Question Answer app, Rick Milite, here at Your Voice for Cool Jazz and More, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
She drink coffee, she drink tea, and then go home. She lie woman, she lie woman, dressed in green, wear silk stockings with golden seams. She lie woman, she lie woman, dressed in red.
And we're back at the Ellison Report, made possible by support from Oneness Mobility. More at OnenessMobility.com and from partners like BE Strategy, Strategy Research Communications, more at StrategyBE.com. And, of course, from listeners like you, avid listeners of WEAA programming. As you know, like, for example, April is Jazz Appreciation Month. That's why we've been playing so much jazz. We've been playing greats like Nina Simone, Miles Davis. Also, you heard a little John Coltrane there. You heard a little Coleman Hawkins. You know, you wouldn't know about that if you weren't listening to WEAA. Is that right? Right. I'm like nodding to the producer. Right. Right. 88.9 FM. You get it all here. You get jazz. You get gospel. You get reggae music. You get Latin, house and hip hop. All my favorite music genres. It's all here. All in one space. WEAA 88.9 FM. Call 410-319-8888. The phone lines are open now. You can also go online and join at WEAA.org. If you want to keep it a little easy, just want to go online, keep it a little quiet, we got you covered there. WEAA.org. Go online, pledge your support, keep making this possible. This is the best programming in the best public radio programming in the Baltimore, Washington, D.C. corridor. Joining us now is Rick Milite. He is the founder of Zip, the question and answer app. You can get more information at thezipapp.com. And we're about to launch, we're actually in the throes of launching our national black voter poll. For more information, you can go to at Ellison Report. And there's more information that will be made available over the next week of our programming as we launch this experimental, first of its kind poll. And I've got Rick online. He's based in San Diego, California, to talk a little bit more about there. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Charles. It's a pleasure to be on this morning. How are you doing?
All right. Excellent. Excellent. And you're always on the go. You're very busy, and I can hear that. And I love that.
So, I'm on a train on the way up to Los Angeles for a meeting, but I think we're going to be quiet now, so we're good.
Okay. No, excellent. I love that. I love the raw programming to hear you on the go. So, Rick, we had you on before. You were talking about how the Zip app works. Talk a little bit about that. So two things. One, how does that app work? You know, just kind of give us a kind of a broad tutorial for our audience. And two, why is it important to participate in surveys and polling like the Zip app?
Well, the beauty of the Zip app is, first of all, it's absolutely free to users. And always will be. So the users can use it as much as they want. There's no limitation on the users. And really what it is, it's an opportunity for people who download the app to ask questions, subjective questions, and answer other people's subjective questions, kind of in a freestyle flow form. It's very much like Tinder. It's actually being called the Tinder for the intellectual. Many people have dubbed it that, and also people are dubbing it as the Google of opinion.
Okay.
And basically, you download it, you select the categories you like, and of course, you know, your great ones for your listening audience would be politics, music, entertainment. These are great, you know, current trends, trendy news, all these things that are really, really important topics. You select those, and then you'll only get questions in those categories. So it really, really is specific to you. It's a lot of fun. I think that's the most important thing about Zip. It's really fun.
And do you find that many of the folks who participate in your app, Rick, seem encouraged about the political process, seem a little bit more encouraged to participate in election cycles, that they want to go out there and vote?
Absolutely, Charles. You can absolutely see in this election cycle that there's a tremendous amount of passion all around the country. And Zip has users in every state of every walk of life. We get about, this week is actually a record for us. We've received over 1.3 million answers to questions just this week alone on this app. So you're getting a tremendous amount of activity. And think of it as like this ongoing national conversation about politics, about music, about entertainment, about crazy, silly stuff, too. I mean, it's just everything that comes to people's mind that they can't Google, that's a subjective question. They go to Zip, they ask the question, and then they enter two answers, and then people can answer it. So it's really great. It's really safe. It's 100% anonymous, and nobody feels threatened by it because there's no one can comment to your questions. So it really gives people the ability to answer and ask questions without any fear of repercussion.
Hey, and also, Rick, tell us, how many people altogether? You were saying you've reached some record users on the app using the survey. How many users nationwide right now so far?
I don't have that information available right this minute, but I can tell you that over this past week and a half, we've been getting one user a minute, every second, every minute of every day.
Wow.
So it's a big number because, you know, if imagine to get 1.2 million answers sent to us on a weekly basis, you can imagine how many people are using this around the country. But it's I can't even throw out a number. It's a big number. And the interesting thing is that it's always active. There's people always on it. So you're always going to get responses to your questions.
Hey, and you know, I'm also curious, too. Folks are going to ask, Rick, especially as we roll out the National Black Voter Poll, you know, what differentiates this from other polls, from those normal polls we see or conventional polls we see on the news or, you know, being announced at the top of a news program? What's so different about this from those traditional polls?
Well, I think that one of the biggest factors is that all the questions on this app are asked by the users. So they're not formulated by pollsters. So the questions you're getting are very raw and very real. And so, you know, it's what your neighbors might be asking. It's what people in other cities might be mm-hmm. asking. And so you're getting questions that are asked by real people.
Mm-hmm.
Then the answers, because the app is 100% anonymous, the answers are very honest. A lot of times when people talk to a pollster or they answer a poll online, they have been identified. The person who's asking the question has been identified. So a lot of times the questions aren't very authentic. People feel that they need to answer a certain way. Sometimes they're even intimidated to answer a certain way. Not on Zip. Zip is 100% anonymous. No one knows who's using it. You know, it could be, for all we know, Barack Obama could be asking and answering questions right on there. You would never know. And so, you know, it's that kind of an app that you just don't know who's answering or asking the question.
All right. We've been talking with Rick Melitti. He is founder and CEO of Crazy Raccoons. That is the technology think tank and development incubator for Zip, the question answer app. For more information, you can go to the Zip, ZIPAPP.com. We're in the process of rolling out this very exciting, groundbreaking, experimental National Black Voter Poll. We're going to be capturing the attitudes and sentiments of what pretty much amounts to about almost 15% of the electorate. It's the African-American electorate. And so the Ellison Report has partnered with Rick Melitti and his folks with the Zip app to put out some very compelling information regarding this election cycle. So, Rick, I'm really excited about this. We'll probably be starting to see the first results of this data in the next month.
Absolutely. And I think just speaking to that point that you just brought up about how large the black vote is as part of the electorate in this next general election, we actually saw a question similar to that on the app. And I think the question said, did you know that 13% of the electorate for the entire general election is a black electorate? It's 13%. And overwhelmingly, people around the country did not know that. So I think it's really important. I think what you're doing is tremendous. I think it's really fantastic that you're bringing this to the forefront of people's minds. And I think that large number not only can help sway an election, but you know, it's so important. It's such an important segment of the United States. Mm-hmm. And I'm just so thrilled to be part of this. I can't tell you, Charles. I'm thrilled.
Excellent. Excellent. Hey, Rick, thanks so much, man. Safe travels to you. All right, Rick Melitti. Thanks so much, Rick.
Thank you, buddy. I look forward to talking to you soon. I know you're busy.
All right. Take care. All right, and we'll actually be right back. We're going to talk a little bit more about our spring membership drive here at your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. Welcome back to the Ellison Report here at your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm your host and executive producer, Charles Ellison, joined here now by Marcellus Bassman Shepard here in studio with me to talk about our spring membership drive. As you know, the phones are open now.
410-319-8888.
That's right. That's right. Or they can also go online, right?
That's right. WEAA.org. And it only takes you 2 to 3 minutes, whether you're calling in or you go to our website.
That's it.
Yes, that is it. As Charles said, it is our spring membership campaign. We only do this twice a year. You know, there are several stations out there that will do 3 to 4 membership drives a year. Mm-hmm. We like to keep the programming going here, so we only do it twice a year. This is an opportunity for you, the listener, to take your experience to the next level mm-hmm. by becoming a member of the station, by putting your tax-deductible financial dollars behind station and programs that are here for you. When you look at the landscape of public radio, most public radio stations out there do a lot of syndicated programming. Mm-hmm. We at WEAA, for our talk shows, we have 15 of them. 13 of them are produced right here in-house. So you get a good local flavor of what's taking place here in Baltimore. And then many of our shows, they cover the national mm-hmm. landscape, just like you do right here on the Ellison Report, a mm-hmm. Program that we were glad to bring to the airwaves, 3 months, 4 months, 5 months?
Yeah, gosh, about 5 months ago. Time is flying, man.
And it has been a great addition to our programming lineup here.
Thank you. Yep.
You do an excellent job of covering the political landscape from local politics to the national stage. This is one incredible year when you look at the mm-hmm. landscape of politics.
So much going on.
So much going on. But how great it is that we have a host who is connected to folks here locally, folks on the Hill, to find out what's mm-hmm. going on out there. Because it affects all of us, and that's what the Ellison Report is here to do. And so if you love the information that Charles Ellison and his team, they put together for you on a weekly basis, now is the time for you to step up to the plate and show your appreciation with your financial contribution. Again, do that at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, securely online at WEAA.org. We have all kind of incredible thank you gifts and premiums that we are offering up.
Tell us about some of those, man.
Well, it is Jazz Appreciation Month.
That's right.
You know, you've been pumping a lot of jazz today.
Yeah.
The new Miles Ahead movie, which is a biopic of Miles Davis.
Right.
It was just released on April 8th and nationally on the 22nd. So folks here in Baltimore will be able to check it out then. There is an original motion picture soundtrack. Hmm. 4 Miles Ahead. Mm. And it features music of Miles, not just from the 50s and the 60s, but the 70s and even into the 80s.
Yeah.
And there's some original music, some new music on there from Grammy Award winner Robert Glasper, who served as not only the producer, but a keyboardist on the project. So you get some old Miles, and you get some new Robert Glasper. Best of both worlds. Yeah. Anybody that calls in at the level of $88 or more, mm-hmm. you'll be able to pick that up. Also, we have some incredible WEAA swag out there, from a new Rhinestone t-shirt that I know a lot of ladies are looking forward to sporting as it gets warm out there. Also, we have the WEAA, listen, it's grilling season. Yeah. We have a brand new WEAA apron that comes with all of the holsters for all of your heavy artillery, from your spatula to your tongs, to your spices,
ready
your
for grilling
special
season.
Sauce, all of that.
Yeah.
Got it all there. And we even have a WEAA chair, a lawn chair, so that as you're out there at the concerts or you're sitting out on your stoop or you're going anywhere,
right,
you can take that WEAA chair with you. I believe it reclines a little bit, has a logo on there, and you're letting folks in the community know that you are a supporter of this great institution of jazz, of music, of culture that has been here for 39 years now. We can't do it without you, the listener, so call us now, 410-319-8888, or securely online at WEAA.org.
You know, I really really appreciate this too, Marcellus, because ever since I've been in this region, when I came here as a youngster, I came here going to college. I didn't go to Morgan State, but going to college in the D.C. area. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to this station like since then. I was looking for that type of dynamic programming that I was afraid I wouldn't get anywhere else after leaving Philadelphia. Philadelphia being as musically eclectic as it is. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, like where am I going to get that? Where else am I going to get that? And I discovered WEAA 88.9 FM. So it's been like a journey.
Right.
Over the past 20-something years of, you know, living in this region and relying on a station like this. You know, it's actually a very important station, too. My wife being from the Caribbean, being from the islands. And, you know, you have like that a lot of that Saturday programming.
Yeah.
You know,
we have a little bit for
reggae,
everybody.
Calypso, to soca. Yeah. That's very important to that community. I didn't realize how essential that was for the West Indian community, the very vibrant West Indian community, Caribbean community here in the region. Until, you know, I met my wife and we got married now after 21 years. And it's like, you know, that's what we listen to on Saturdays. And then the talk programming, I mean, the information that flows through this station. I mean, you know, how we're bringing the world to Baltimore, but also kind of bringing a bit of Baltimore to the world, too. Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's just, so you got to call 410-319-8888. Can't get it anywhere else, or go to weaa.org too.
There it is, the Ellison Report, brother. Thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you, brother.
Continued
right,
success.
Brother. Thank you, sir.
Support
Appreciate
Charles
it.
Ellison right now at 410-319-8888 or at weaa.org. We thank you in advance.
All right, thank you, sir.
Pleasure.